Today, we'll be talking about Beating Procrastination, a Medical Monday episode dealing with broken collarbones, and prepper uses for salt. Stay with us.
Welcome to Practical Prepping. Today is February 19th, 2024, and this is episode 452. This is the prepping podcast with no bunkers, no zombies, and no alien invasions, just practical prepping, where we believe that stuff happens, so we need to stay prepared. And we're here to help you get prepared. Hi, I'm Krista.
And I'm Mark. And if you'd like the expanded notes for this episode, go to practicalprepping.info/452. Now, I've only done this once before, but I'm going to recommend two podcasts for you to check out, and we'll put the links in the episode notes. The first one is Live Well and Flourish with Clyde Van Slyke. It's livewellandflourish.com, and Craig will help you get control of who you are and help you live a flourishing life. The other is the Ask Ralph podcast, and it is AskRalphPodcast.com. Ralph's an accountant, and he covers some tax issues and financial issues, but he also covers from motivation to spiritual issues, and I really like the Wacky Wednesdays. So check them both out. The links are in the episode notes. Let's get into today's episode.
And we're not going to waste any time jumping right into procrastination. Yeah. Hey, see what I did there?
Yeah.
You know, that can affect every aspect of your life, even including prepping. So overall, procrastination can have a far-reaching effect on various aspects of life. So it is vitally important to develop strategies to overcome procrastination and improve time management skills.
Now, procrastination can have several negative effects. And here are some of those. Increased stress and anxiety.
Well, of course.
Putting things off, putting tasks off, can lead to a buildup of stress, and you find yourself up against a deadline, and you've got the pressure to complete the task, and that leads to poor performance. It often results in rushed or incomplete work, leading to lower quality outcomes and potentially negative consequences, such as poor grades, and I suffered from those, and a lot of that was procrastinating about studying, or even performance reviews at work.
You know, something else procrastination will do for you, that will gain you missed opportunities, because it can lead to missed deadlines, and that results in missed opportunities for advancement, or maybe achieving some personal or professional goals. It can also lead to decreased productivity, because you're delaying tasks. That's what procrastination means. You're putting something off and delaying it. That reduces your overall productivity and your efficiency, as time that could be spent completing tasks is instead wasted on avoidance behaviors.
It also has a negative impact on our mental health. See, that chronic procrastination can contribute to feelings of guilt, low self-esteem, depression, and individuals might struggle to break free of that cycle of avoidance and negative self-talk. It also can lead to strained relationships. And this happens to be with us at times, because I have been one to procrastinate over the years. And Krista's always owned me about not putting things off. But it can impact those relationships. Others might become frustrated or disappointed by missed commitments. Now, relate this to prepping. How does procrastination in prepping hurt us?
Well, if you're putting off getting your resources built up, the time may come when you need them, and you could have spent the time building up your preps and your resources, but you didn't do it. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have the batteries you need. You don't have the fuel that you need. You don't have the water purifier you need. You don't have the plan written out in a binder that you need. You know, there's just so many things that if you just put them off, they're gonna bite you hard when the time comes that you have to put your hands on it.
And when you get to it, it's going to make you feel overwhelmed.
Right, because you've got so much to do and almost no time to do it.
Right. And when you say no time to do it, we really don't know. Something could happen tomorrow.
Well, I'm just saying after the crisis strikes,
It's too late.
It's too late at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like after the snow starts, you can't go buy milk and bread because it's all gone.
One of the qualities we look for as preppers is the notion that we don't panic when the crisis hits or when the emergency strikes. And we find that those who are panicking, those who are frightened, those who are paralyzed with fear are the ones that didn't take any time to put their prepping plan in order. And so that's kind of part of why we're here, too, is that everybody has a first day of prepping for them. You know, and somebody listening to us right now may be on day one of preparedness. And of course, we're not saying you have to be all completed in 24 hours.
Oh, no.
But you do have to at least get started and kind of stick with it.
And if you're on day one, we commend you for getting started.
Shown up.
Tomorrow will be day two. And pretty soon you'll be a week or a month or a year down the road and you'll start to feel better about your preparedness. Now, there are some ways that we can beat procrastination, but it involves adopting strategies and habits that overcome the tendency to delay tasks. There are some things that can help us combat procrastination. Now, one thing that I do for procrastination, and Krista can attest to it, and I'm better, is that I have one Magic Mind productivity shot every day. And it helps me overcome that procrastination. It helps me reduce stress, and it gives me mental clarity. My next 30-day supply came in on Thursday. It's automatically shipped because I have the 30-day subscription, so I don't have to worry about reordering. Now, if you haven't tried Magic Mind, there's a link and a discount code on our website, practicalprepping.info, and it's on the Friends and Affiliates page. And they have a 30-day money-back guarantee. And I really encourage you to try it. If it doesn't work as well for you as it does for me, you can get a full refund with just an email. So that's just something that I do. But here's another thing that we can do to beat procrastination is to break tasks into smaller steps.
Yeah, you know, you want to break down an overwhelming task into manageable steps. I call them bites. You know, the old adage about how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Right.
Well, that's what you have to do to break down your procrastination problem is to take that large task and then just parse it out into portions. It makes it less overwhelming and more achievable. And you can feel like you can achieve the goal of getting that task done if you just take it in smaller steps. But you've got to get started and you got to keep at it.
Exactly. And this really works into prepping in that we make that list. We make that plan. What do we need in food? Even the government says, let's do 3 days. They say everybody needs to have 3 days done, and that's the government. I think that we, the very, very bare minimum that we need to have is to be able to be self-sufficient for 2 weeks. We had an 11-day weekend not long ago.
Yeah, that's true. We sure did. Yeah,
that was because of snow and ice. But you take all of that stuff and you break it down into manageable bites. And you set specific goals and deadlines. In 2 weeks, I'm going to have an extra week of food. That's easily achievable. In a month, I'm going to have 2 weeks of food. In 3 months, I'm going to have a month's worth of food. And you just break it down into smaller steps. Clearly define your goals and set the deadlines for completing those tasks and to create a sense of urgency and accountability.
You also need to create a structured schedule. This is where I have made use of my device calendar. When I need to do a task, when I know there's something I need to finish up or complete with my preps and my resources and my pantry or my gear, I put it on my calendar that I need to either purchase or acquire whatever that is, and I have a date. And so I have a structured schedule. It can be daily, weekly, monthly, whatever it's going to take for me to dedicate that time to the work of prepping or to my own job, or study if I'm a student, or even the leisure activities and even vacation plans, and stick to that structured schedule as much as possible, and you'll find that the procrastination bug seems to lose its bite for you.
Yeah, I have to do a daily structured schedule. Now, I don't set mine up. I used to. From 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, I do this. From 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, I do this. But I set mine up and have an idea of how much time it's going to take me for each of these tasks, but I almost do a to-do list for the day. I have one that is just open-ended. These are things that I need to do. I have things I need to do this week, and I have what I need to do today. And that helps me to stay on task. And we need to prioritize those tasks. Identify the ones that are based on the most importance and the most urgent. We have differentiated what is important and what is urgent. She is my most important thing. And it used to be I'd get called out. You know, I'd miss Christmas lunch or something. It was more urgent because of the job that I had. So prioritize those tasks and separate the important and the urgent and focus on those important things.
You also want to try to eliminate your distractions. See, that's where I kind of struggle. Sometimes I can get a little bit absorbed into social media or some other interest, maybe even a book that I'm reading that actually might be distracting me from something that is more important or more urgent. So I want to recognize what's distracting me. And I want to now create a conducive work environment. So I'm going to want to turn off the notifications and maybe put those devices down and to avoid multitasking, because sometimes that is not efficient at all. You also want to use some time management techniques. Now, this is kind of cool. You can utilize techniques such as the Pomodoro technique. That is working in short bursts with regular breaks. Or you could try time blocking, which is allocating specific time slots for tasks. Or you could try this, a 2-minute rule. Starting tasks that can be completed in 2 minutes or less immediately.
Yes, when I'm going through cleaning out my inbox, some things need to be filed, some things need to be put on the list to take an hour or 30 minutes or something. But if it's a task that I can handle in 2 minutes, it's done. I go ahead and do that task right now.
There's something else that'll help you beat procrastination, and that is to find your motivation. We're not talking about actors here. We're talking about real people. You want to identify the reasons behind your procrastination and find ways to increase your motivation, whether it's setting a reward for completing a task or maybe visualizing your success at doing so or even seeking support from other people. Something's got to help pull you away from whatever it is. Either I feel like procrastination is born out of either fear or laziness. Those seem to be the top two. And like, if you can address why is it a fear causing you to procrastinate, or why are you being lazy and thoughtless, you know, about that task, address that, deal with it, be a grown up, you know, and then increase your motivation. And I find sometimes that little self-reward, you know, is really kind of fun. I had literally, just like a child, I have literally saved candy bars for when I've done a job and have finished it. And I have my handy candy bar. Let me tell you something. That works for me, you know, and that can help me stop procrastinating.
A lot of times for me, it is when I finish this task, I can have another cup of coffee.
There you go.
And that helps to motivate me to go ahead and get through it, because if I take a break doing something else, I'm just prolonging when I can have that cup of coffee. So that's the carrot.
Listen, we're just being real talk here. Everybody thrives on that type of reward system. And if that helps beat procrastination, it's not hurting anybody else or yourself, go for it.
Yep. And practice some self-discipline. We cultivate that self-discipline by developing habits such as setting aside those specific times for work, avoiding procrastination triggers, and holding yourself accountable for your actions. If I get into Facebook, let me just check it for just a minute here. That just a minute can turn into 30 minutes. So I just, while I'm working, I just quit checking it. That's my self-discipline toward that. Krista mentioned earlier about addressing underlying issues. It might be a fear of failure. That happens a lot of times in podcasting. People are afraid to start because they're afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And I heard of one guy that had been starting his podcast. He was working on starting his podcast for 10 years.
Oh, my.
There's a point where you just have to say, okay, there's something that I'm afraid of that's holding me back. It might be fear of failure. It might be perfectionism.
Yeah.
Good is better than perfect. If perfect doesn't get done.
Okay. I figured that out.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, I'll have to edit this podcast. Mm-hmm. I will not get it to perfect. I could work on it for the next 3 weeks and not get it to perfect.
Oh, I see what you're saying. For some people, they've got this perfection ideal.
Yes.
That's really holding them down.
Right. So good is good enough.
Good is better than perfect when perfect can never be done.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I will be able to get it edited and out good, but perfect ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither is my English. Or you might have a lack of confidence, and that may be contributing to your procrastination. Do I want to work on this and not be able to get it done? Or do I want to go ahead and do it, even if it scares the bejesus out of me?
Well, you know, at some point you have to get up and take a step.
Exactly. But you can start small.
That's true.
And if you're struggling to get started on a task, just commit to working on it for just a few minutes. Often getting started is the hardest part. And once you've overcome that initial hurdle, it becomes easier to continue.
You know, you have to remember that overcoming procrastination, it is a gradual process. And that will require some persistence and some effort on your part. Be patient with yourself if you're going through this, because I think a lot of us know that there's areas that we do procrastinate. Some of us have a real big problem with it. Others have a smaller problem with it. But if you're recognizing it, if you'll start implementing some of these strategies, you'll work toward the better habits that you'll need to take the place of the time you've wasted procrastinating. And don't put that off.
And it works in every area of life.
Yeah, get started yesterday. Come on.
Whether it's your personal life, whether it is your business life, whether it's church, whether it's Bible reading, whatever it is.
Painting the wall. I mean, whatever.
Yeah. Don't put it off, but put some of these tips into place. This is our Medical Monday segment.
Medical Monday.
And we're talking about broken collarbones.
Owie.
And I've broken mine twice.
Yes, you have. Oh.
And I started early. I was 51 weeks old the first time. Now, I don't remember that one.
Oh.
But my dad said I dove off of the couch and broke my collarbone.
Oh, my word.
And the second time, I was 17 and we'd snuck onto the high school football field, and some of us were playing tackle football with no protective equipment, and I broke it there.
Oh, dear.
And it was kind of a pain getting back out and getting to the hospital.
I'll bet.
But we're doing this segment because of the potential for injury and a long-duration SHTF, and that stuff hits the fan, as well as the fact that collarbones or clavicles get broken a lot, especially with children and teens.
You know, any significant force applied to that collarbone area can result in a fracture because it is a relatively exposed position on your body. The clavicle or your collarbone is commonly broken by falling onto an outstretched hand, believe it or not. When you're falling, your instinctive reaction is often to extend your arm to break the fall, but that can result in force being transmitted up the arm and onto the clavicle.
And we see a lot of them in sports injuries, like I mentioned with mine. Even though it was not organized sports, it was sports. I was playing football. And contact sports like football or rugby, as well as a lot of other activities like skiing or biking, can lead to collisions or falls that result in these clavicular fractures.
Wow, medical word, clavicular.
Yeah. Broken collarbone.
Okay. Well, another obvious one would be a car accident. The impact of a car crash, especially in the chest area, hitting that steering wheel or a dashboard, that can certainly cause a collarbone fracture, and as can a front impact by the seatbelt itself.
I've worked a lot of them over the years where the only injury they really had was a broken collarbone.
How about that?
Because during the impact, that seatbelt locked, and it very possibly saved their life, but it broke their collarbone.
My word.
And we can deal with that fairly easy. Trauma from a blow or a hit. Any direct blow to the shoulder or the collarbone area, such as those occurring during, get this, physical altercations.
You mean like a fight?
Like a fight.
Okay.
And that's one way. If somebody's got, let's say, a knife in their hand threatening you, and you happen to have a cane in your hand, break that collarbone. They'll drop that knife.
Well, golly.
That's a tip.
I know what you're saying, but ew.
She's kind of bent up here, but that can break that collarbone, and it takes that arm out.
My word.
Now, here's some of the signs of a broken collarbone. If you've ever had one, you know what they are.
Absolutely.
Pain. And it's an immediate pain at the site of the fracture, and it may worsen with movement or if pressure is applied to the area.
So are you telling me that your collarbone can be broken and you're not even aware of it at first?
Well, it's...
You get aware of
it. I guess you could crack it and not be that aware of it, but mine are dried enough that they're going to break pretty quick. And you're going to know it pretty quick.
Well, there's also going to be some swelling of that tissue there and some tenderness around that collarbone. And it's often accompanied by some very noticeable bruising.
Mm-hmm. In some cases, a visual deformity or abnormal positioning of the collarbone may be very noticeable, especially if it's severe. Now, mine was very much displaced. That's something that would be.
And this also led for you, especially you've experienced it, difficulty in moving your arm.
Yes.
Gives you a limited range of motion in that affected shoulder or arm due to that pain and instability caused by the fracture.
Yeah, and I've always said that when you see somebody holding their arm, cradling their arm because it hurts to let it hang down.
Mm-hmm.
Suspect a...
Rather than a broken arm, it might be a broken collarbone.
Exactly. And they're holding it up to take the weight off of it.
Exactly.
Now, this next one's kind of gross.
Okay.
So hold your ears. You can have a grinding or a cracking sensation.
Oh, yikes.
It's called crepitus.
Oh, my.
And what it is bone ends rubbing against bone ends.
Oh, I'm getting the chills.
But some people can hear that or feel that.
I bet so.
When attempting to move that shoulder or that arm.
Well, saying shoulder, sometimes that shoulder will sag,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the structure has been impaired. Mm-hmm. That affected shoulder will sag downward compared to the unaffected side, and especially if the fracture is displaced.
Yes, but there are some things we can do.
Okay.
And these are pre-hospital treatment of a broken clavicle. And we do this primarily because we'll run into those, you know, grandkids, kids, friends, neighbors, whatever.
Even adults that might
even
fall.
Even adults, yeah. Elderly folks that can fall.
Sure.
And these are some things that we can do in a pre-hospital setting, even if we're going to the hospital. And then at the very end of this, I'll tell you what we can do if there is no hospital care.
Okay. Okey-doke.
First thing is assess the scene. Make sure it's safe for you and the injured person. We always want to do that. Then we assess the patient. Check for any life-threatening conditions or injuries. Let's work our ABCs, airway, breathing, and if they're talking, they're breathing. But if they're having difficulty breathing, that could indicate a punctured lung.
Right.
Because it can get punctured from that. And our C for circulation, and in this case, is there bleeding? Is there something that we need to take care of? You could actually have a compound fracture of the clavicle.
Mm-hmm.
So check for any bleeding. We may need to stop that as well. But if there's no life-threatening conditions, go ahead with treating the clavicle injury. And do that by stabilizing them. You really don't want them walking around at that time.
Certainly.
Have them sit down or lie down comfortably. I like the seated position, but whichever one is the least painful for them. And immobilize that arm. If they're cradling it, you need to put a sling on it. You can use a sling or improvised material such as a triangular bandage, a shirt, a towel, or anything to support that injured arm and keep it close to the body. This is that sling and swath. We put the sling around it, and then we tie the swath around it to keep it from flopping out.
Right.
And it should be placed under that forearm and around the neck and bring it all the way up over the elbow. So that's a great way to go with that.
You also want to apply some ice if it's available. Get an ice pack or a cold pack wrapped in a cloth. and apply that to the injured area to reduce the swelling and to alleviate the pain. Do not apply ice directly to the skin. No. Always have it wrapped in some kind of a toweling, bandaging sleeve of a shirt, just something. You want it cold, but you don't want to be freezing their skin.
Right.
Also, you want to deal with some pain management if you can. If the patient is in significant pain and it's medically authorized to take pain medication, provide some appropriate pain relief according to medical protocols or guidelines.
Yeah, and that medically authorized is the medication that you have available, is that allowable for them?
Right, it's got to be appropriate
for
that patient.
Some people cannot take aspirin. Some cannot take other things.
Like me, I cannot take Lortab.
No, yeah. You do not want to see her on Lortab.
You just give me one and see what happens.
It's going to be a...
You're going to wish you had a broken collarbone.
And you might wind up with one, honestly, folks.
It makes me quite ill.
She goes quite crazy with
Anyway, moving on.
All right. Now, in this, we're also going to monitor their vital signs and keep an eye on those.
Make sure they're not going into shock.
Yeah, exactly. And if they look like they're going into shock, then we're going to treat for shock.
Mm-hmm.
But keep them calm. Reassure the patient and keep them as calm and as comfortable as possible. Hopefully, you're waiting on medical assistance to come, or you may need to transport them yourself. But you want to prevent further injury, and you want them to avoid moving that arm to avoid any activities that may aggravate the injury. Now, when I broke mine in the ball field, we had crawled through a hole in the concrete fence.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember that hole in the concrete fence, but...
Y'all actually were out on the playing field?
We were out on the playing field.
It was about wall you're talking about.
It was about the 40-yard line where I broke mine.
Oh, great.
And my cousin was with me. I had picked him up, and we'd met some other guys up there to play. Well, now I've got to crawl back out of a hole with a bad arm.
Oh, my word.
So what happened was my cousin, I got down on my knees, and my cousin actually held my arm as I bent over to crawl on threes. I used my right hand for crawling, and he held me until I got through the hole and could hold my own arm
again.
And then he wound up, even as an unlicensed driver, he wound up driving me to the hospital because there was no way I could drive that particular day.
Well, I'm curious now, was your mother on duty that night?
She was not there when I got to the hospital.
Okay.
And what she's referring to, my mother was a nurse at that hospital.
Uh-huh.
But no, this was, she had already gotten off.
Okay.
So she got called back in.
Okay.
But yes, I went to the hospital and he got me there and everything worked out.
Okay.
But you want to prevent any further injury to that. And as I said, you may need to transport them to a medical facility, or you may need to call emergency medical services, whichever one works for you. Now, if there is no medical care available.
You're talking about like in an emergency situation?
Like in a long duration SHTF situation.
We're putting on our prepper ears now.
We're putting on our prepper ears. There's no doc in a box down the street. There's no ER. We're 100 miles in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And we're not going anywhere.
Mm.
You can fashion a figure eight brace from behind to pull the shoulders back.
Okay.
Now, this is where video would be good right here, is to show you that I'm pulling my shoulders back. And what that does is it kind of stretches that collarbone out and helps it to stay.
Maybe to realign it.
To realign and stay in alignment. And you want to be in that brace for a couple of weeks. But it's pretty much making a figure eight and pulling the shoulders back, because that's what they're going to do at the hospital is put a figure eight brace on you.
Okay. So look up figure eight braces.
Yes. And they have the advantage of the X-ray machines to know that it's in place and stuff, which most of us are not going to have an X-ray machine in an SHTF event. Now, this segment is not intended for an alternative to seeking professional medical advice for a broken clavicle, but it's an aid for pre-hospital treatment or in a grid-down situation where professional medical care may not be available.
Our next segment, we're going to be talking about something we all are familiar with, and that's good old salt. You know, salt is invaluable for preppers, especially for long-duration events. mainly because salt is used for food preservation. It's a natural preservative. Salt has been used as a preservative for literally thousands of years and is still used to this day for curing meats and fish and vegetables, thus extending their shelf life.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a number of uses here. You can use it in hygiene and sanitation.
Oh, yeah.
It can be used to make homemade cleaning solutions, and it has an abrasive for scrubbing dishes and surfaces. I know you use it for cleaning cast iron.
Oh, yes. I especially use kosher salt because it's extra large granulated. And just kosher salt and a paper towel and maybe just a little spritz of oil cleans my cast iron beautifully. Even people will use salt. There's a thing called salt scrub. There's also sugar scrub, but we're talking about salt. Some people will do a salt scrub on their bodies. They'll make a paste of salt and olive oil, and they'll scrub, and it's a natural exfoliant. And so then they'll get in the shower and wash it all off. But be careful that you don't rub over any open wounds with that, because you're not going to like that at all.
And I'll tell you something else that you won't like, guys, and don't ask me how I know this.
Oh, boy.
Do not put your wife's cast iron in the dishwasher.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah.
You will not like the result.
You better have used some salt instead.
Not the result of the cast iron, but you will not like what happens to you when she finds
it. So use that kosher salt to clean the cast iron.
Let's move forward. We can use it for health and medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used for oral rehydration solutions. You can use it for cleaning wounds with a saline solution.
Maybe now, a little bit of a sting, but still.
But we're not saying pour salt in the wound.
No, that's true.
But we're talking about really actually normal saline solution in IV is 0.9%.
Well, it's saline. Also safe in your eyes, so it doesn't sting.
Yes.
But it cleanses.
And that's the isotonic solution that matches the body's percentage. We can use it for gargling for sore throats. Now, I mentioned the hydration. There is an American Red Cross salt sugar recipe. It's especially good for diarrhea and for dehydration.
Okay.
See, a person can be kept alive for weeks on it. Now, you won't be happy about it, but you won't die.
You know, a lot of survivalists have used the salt sugar hydration. I know Dr. T talked about it.
He took that with him, along with some other minerals that he put into that.
That's why he lasted so long in the wilderness.
And that was one of his items that he took. But here's the recipe. And this is the short version. Take a quart of water and add 2 tablespoons of sugar and 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
Okay.
See how low we're making that percentage of salt?
It's there, but it's not too much.
Exactly. You can use it for animal care. Thinking about salt blocks or mineral licks here, that's essential for livestock and even sometimes pets to maintain their electrolyte balance and their overall health. Those of us that grew up on a farm, we know what that salt lick tastes like. Because sooner or later as a kid, you got to lick the salt block.
You know you're going to. You know, in a survival scenario, salt can be used as a very valuable bartering element because its commodity is very, very valuable. In fact, salt, historically, when I was studying Western civilization in college, salt was a form of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
It was money. It was valuable, and it added so much flavor and taste of foods that normally don't have it. And so it became a form of money.
Yeah. And in biblical times, they would carry salt with them.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of the salt covenant, where when they made a salt covenant, they put a pinch of my salt into yours and a pinch of your salt into mine. And we could not break that covenant unless we give the other one salt back.
Which would be impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. So that was a definite covenant that could not be broken from the salt that they carried.
And we do keep 4-pound boxes of rock salt and regular salt and kosher salt in our prepper pantry. And when the time comes that I need salt, I'll shop it out of my pantry. But I like to keep a ready amount of salt available because it's going to be completely necessary if I can't get access to a grocery store for, say, a year or two.
And
I want my salt.
And we'll tell you why in just a few minutes that we're going to be adding even more salt to our stores.
Okie doke.
But you can use it for pest control.
Cool.
It's great to deter slugs and snails in the garden or to control weeds in driveways or walkways.
How about that?
It will kill that grass. So you can do that. Flavor food with it. That's what we do most of the time. Beyond the preservation, it just enhances the flavor in our food. Who can have a tomato sandwich without salt?
You know, you can't bake a cake or a cupcake without salt. Even for sweet goods, salt is a necessary element to help enhance the sweetness of baked things.
And think about watermelon. We have to have salt on our watermelon.
We don't. You do.
Uh-oh.
We're going to start this argument again.
I am not a melon salter. I love my salt, but not on my... Who out there salts your watermelon and who doesn't? I'm on team no salt. Mark is on team salt. Who's with me and who's with him? I want to know. Email us.
I'm on the right team, but let's go on. Ice melting. Now, we can use salt to melt ice. And we talked about this some in, I think it was on the Practical Prepping Podcast Facebook page, not the group, but when we were having the ice storms.
Yeah.
And it was, well, they use it to melt it off the roadways, but we can use it to melt it off of our steps and our walkways. Mm-hmm. They're using it on the highways. We're using it in small areas on our steps and walkways that we must travel.
Sure.
And you just scatter that salt out. It helps to melt that ice. Pretty much any type of salt can be used to melt that ice, but rock salt or ice cream salt is really great for it, and it's available in 40-pound bags from the wholesale clubs.
That's usually the most affordable way to purchase it. And if it's too chunky, you can just put an amount into a bag and just hit it with a mallet or a rolling pin to grind it up a little bit, because you don't want your rock salt too chunky. You do want to grind some of it up or chop some of it up.
Depends on what you're doing with it.
Exactly.
If you're using it for ice cream making, just as it comes out of the bag or the box, if you're melting ice on the sidewalks, just use that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to use that store for the table, then do exactly what you're talking about and grind that up. We were talking about this earlier, and smaller amounts of aquarium salt, if you don't want to buy 40 pounds, you can buy the 4-pound rock salt in the grocery store, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also buy aquarium salt. Now, it's already finely ground, as you were telling me, because it goes into an aquarium.
And it will not have any iodine in it. That's one of the most important things, because it's for aquarium use and they don't want any iodine in it.
Right. But you can buy it in 1-pound or 5-pound bags or cartons at a pet store or wherever aquarium supplies are sold. And yes, table salt will work for melting the sidewalks as well. But preppers often stockpile salt due to its versatility and its importance in various survival scenarios.
Now, today's cup of coffee comes to us from Rich.
Rich, we really do appreciate it.
We certainly do. And if you receive value from the podcast, why don't you help us out by giving back just a little? First, you could buy us a cup of coffee. Or second, you can start your Amazon shopping from our website. That costs you nothing extra, but pays us a small commission on qualifying purchases. And you'll find the links to both of those at practicalprepping.info. They help us out, and we do really appreciate it.
And as Krista always says,
stuff happens. Stay prepared.
And we'll see you next time.